This is the Thanks for Sharing podcast, the podcast where we explore all things recovery, healing, and relationship.
Remember to subscribe and download episodes in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on the Podbean app.
You can find more Thanks for Sharing at www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com or on Facebook at facebook.com/healingpaths. That's paths with an S. Hello and welcome to the Thanks for Sharing podcast. I'm John T.
I'm Jackie P.
We are going to hit step five today in our continued series on just examining the 12 steps through different fellowships' perspectives.
Yes.
So let's dive right in.
Okay.
I'll start with Sex Addicts Anonymous.
Okay.
Their book. This is on page 37. And this, I think for a lot of people who work a step four, I think it's pretty common to ask, do I have to do step five? Is that really important? I've already looked at all this stuff.
Right.
And so on page 37, they address that. It says, although we have recorded a detailed inventory of the fourth step, it is a different thing altogether to admit the truth to ourselves. We need to be careful to acknowledge the exact nature of our wrongs inwardly so that denial can give way to acceptance. Sharing our inventory with another human being helps in this process. I think that's where the paradox is. I think it's hard to go inward if we can't go outward,
right?
As well, when we hear ourselves admitting our wrongs to someone, explaining all the details out loud, our past begins to make more sense, and we can start to view our lives with more clarity. As the reality of our shortcomings sinks in, we can bring them in humility to our higher power. Our deepest acceptance comes when we know that the God of our understanding loves us no matter what we have done. This may seem like a very difficult task. We should not lose heart. During the fifth step, our sponsor will often share his or her own experience with us, letting us know about similar actions, feelings, and shortcomings. Knowing that others feel the way that we do and have done some of the same kinds of things helps to relieve our shame and isolation. Our sponsor supports us emotionally as we face the most painful parts of ourselves, allowing us to look at our wrongs without flinching. So I like that interplay, because I think that can be one of the things that's scary about step five, is that I'm just going to go and tell somebody everything mm-hmm. that I've done, and what are they going to do? Just listen to it?
What? Right.
I think step five is a very active process, and as we look at some of the other fellowships, they'll talk about how the sponsor is going to give feedback, mm-hmm. and you know, this one mentioned the sponsor is going to share their story.
Yeah.
I think it's a big step in coming out of isolation to share our fourth step with
Fifth
somebody.
Fifth step really starts to bring us out of that place of isolation and loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing from Sex Addicts Anonymous that I think is important to remember when doing fifth step, it says, we do not take the fifth step with our partners or families. This is not the time for selfish confessions. We need time in the program and the help of experienced members before we can judge what to reveal to our families or those closest to us. Most importantly, we admit the character defects that motivated our actions, such as pride, envy, selfishness, or greed. These defects or failings are the exact nature of our wrongs. They are those aspects of temperament that hold back our spiritual growth and keep us locked in self-defeating habits, attitudes, and beliefs.
So that's really step five isn't just here's the dirty laundry. It's more like mm-hmm. what's the story the dirty laundry tells about me.
Right. Well, and we see this because we do a very thorough, in-depth disclosure process with couples when we're mm-hmm. working with them. And generally, we're not going to go forward with disclosure until the person has worked a fourth, fifth step.
Yeah.
Because there's stuff that will come out irresponsibly to the partner or their families if they do it too soon.
Yeah.
So I think recognizing that this is a time, you know, in doing the fourth step, it's a time for the recovering addict or the person working the steps to really focus on themselves and doing that, getting out of isolation and feeling the freeing that comes with fifth step with their sponsor or whoever they chose to do that with, but it's not time to take it to a family member mm-hmm. yet. Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of internal incubation that has to happen before we're ready to share with people close to us.
Uh-huh.
The stakes are high in those relationships.
Right.
And the wounds go pretty deep. I think the people closest to us in addiction are the ones that are harmed the most.
Yeah.
And I often use the metaphor with my clients. If you went to a doctor and they did a procedure that they botched, would you go back to that doctor to fix it? Probably not.
Yeah.
You would go to somebody else. And I think with spouses of addicts, the timing needs to be absolutely right for the addict to start repairing some of the wounds with their spouse.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like you mentioned, without having worked a fourth, fifth step, I think we can be pretty ham-handed in what we're trying to do.
And that doesn't mean that you can't have some joint sessions before they've gotten to this point, you know, because it can take quite a while to get to this point.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean, I mean, in our practice, we may have joint sessions before then, but we are very careful not even to call them marital sessions. We're calling them joint sessions where we're just all in the same room and having a discussion about something that needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
But we're not to the point of repairing and really coming together and bonding as a couple.
Well, and I think it's interesting in those joint sessions, I think they're very spirit of fifth step where we're recognizing some of our own character defects or some of our own habits or actions that get in the way of the relationships we want. And that's a lot of work that we're doing in those sessions.
Right.
Like, hey, did you notice when this topic came up, you just totally ignored your spouse and how that felt? And there's I think there's an amends process that starts, but I think it's an amends in action, not an amends in words.
Yeah. Yeah. Going to the AA Big Book, this starts on page 72, says, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step. Then on, down on the page, end of page 73, says we must be entirely honest with somebody if we expect to live long or happily in this world. Rightly and naturally, we think well before we choose the person or persons with whom to take this intimate and confidential step. Then it gets some information about how you choose that person. And then over on page 75, the first full paragraph on that page, it says, when we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory, and we are prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. They should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help, and they will be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and we go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall away from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. I think that's great because that's in the AA Big Book, that's the first time having a spiritual experience is promised and talked about, that this is something that because of what you've done now, you're going to be having a spiritual experience with it.
Well, and I think for me, that's at the core of spirituality is turning from the inside and looking at how that fits with what's outside of me. And so I think talking to that other person, that is inherently spiritual because you're looking at a larger picture of where you fit with people, and you're experiencing that fit with another person.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it's important here. Carver mentioned in Back to Basics last summer that it may very well be the case that you are ready to do your fourth step and there isn't anyone available to hear your fifth step. And he recommended moving on to step six, but being completely willing. And just like the book said, once you find that person, you immediately act and you take the step. I think it's critical to find the right person to talk to.
Yeah. And in some recovering communities, I think that's true of the recovering community in the state we live in. It can be difficult sometimes to find the right person to do that step, and often because it can be difficult to find somebody who's done that step.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you need to share with somebody who's already been there.
And General Path Through the 12 Steps talks about that, kind of gives some of the attributes of what you'd be looking for in a person to share a fifth step with. And this is on page 226. It says, Successful fifth steps come from sharing your written inventory with another person who will recognize and note the sources of greatest feeling or the places where you are stuck, a consultant as well as a witness. The person who hears your fifth step will help you over the difficult parts of your story. I think it's hard to be the person who can recognize and note sources where there's great feelings or where you're stuck if they haven't been there themselves.
Mm-hmm. Right, because they tend to rescue you from what you're feeling there, right? Or try to minimize, justify, rationalize. It's tough to have somebody really kind of talking about their defects, really opening up their inventory and to just not try to make them feel better about it, but recognize the fact that they're opening up is what makes them feel better about it.
Well, and I think it's going to be hard, even if you can intellectually understand that, I think it'll be hard to feel like you can do that if that hasn't been done for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like recognizing the value of letting you sit with those emotions and letting you experience those emotions instead of being rescued from mm-hmm. them. I think in any addiction that you're practicing, that's what's happening is a bypass of those emotions and those experiences. And if you're sharing a fifth step with somebody who's going to assist you in bypassing, it might do you just as much good to go get high.
Right. Which is another way to bypass the emotions.
Right.
In the general path through the 12 principles, the principle associated with step 5 is openness. Makes sense. And they talk about initially, before they get into talking about step 5, they talked about bonding, and I thought that that was really important to understand. They say bonding, or what psychologists also call attachment, begins very early in life. Bonding is not about feeding a child or changing diapers or making sure a child is entertained, though of course those are important. Bonding occurs when the parent simply holds the child and the two gaze silently in each other's eyes for minutes at a time. The parent is not trying to teach the child something or keep him or her amused. That unblinking gaze is a deep communion, two people being fully present with each other. This experience is vital because it assures the child that he or she has a place in the universe, that the child deserves to be here on the planet, that the child matters. Because the child has the full attention of dad or mom, the child knows he or she is valued. As a consequence, the child is much more likely to grow up feeling safe, secure, and confident. Then it says, many of us addicts did not have this experience. Our deep human need to bond was thwarted, and we know it. In the depth of our brains, we can feel that we missed out on something. We deeply and often unconsciously crave bonding and intimacy. Yet we also have trouble bonding with other people, often because of insufficient bonding experiences when we were small. Instead, we bond with addiction. And then over on 104, oh, yes, that is on 104. It says, bonding is the key to openness. When we have people we can trust and a group where we belong, we can begin to open. We open our minds to new ideas and new ways of seeing the world. We open our hearts to empathy, compassion, and love. And in step 5, we open our lockbox of secrets and wrongdoings and tell them to someone we trust. This person listens to us and cares about us. It's basic bonding, but adult with adult instead of adult with child. Something else essential happens in this process. In opening to this person and admitting the exact nature of our wrongs, we make ourselves vulnerable. Our witness learns all about the mistakes we've made, the harm we've caused, and the values and vows we've broken. Yet the listener doesn't disrespect us or criticize us or go away upon knowing about our flaws and wrongdoings. Instead, he or she accepts us. Our disclosure doesn't end the relationship, it deepens it. This encounter sends our brain the same message as the silent parent-child gaze. It tells us you are redeemable. You do deserve a place on the planet. You belong here. It is the beginning of our release from feelings of unworthiness and shame. Day by day, we open, we bond, and we heal. It's because of this bonding that many people in 12-step groups form lifelong friendships, and many treatment groups continue to meet socially for years after treatment has ended.
That got me thinking about that principle of bonding, just different dynamics in a 12-step group that can be there. And it reminds me, in the back of the ACA big book, it talks about different kinds of shares. And I think this is pertinent here because I think steps 4 and 5 really start to change what we feel is important to share about ourselves or what we recognize as important to share about ourselves. So it says, I'm just going to paraphrase a little bit. When people first show up, they'll give the abuse log or the codependent story. They won't have little, they'll have little recovery. So they'll talk about all the horrible things that happened to them, which I think is important to express.
Right.
And I think that's important to feel like when I express this, the group of people I'm in get that. It says as they get, a little more sober, a little more in the program, they will kind of grow up in that sharing. And let's see, they'll learn how to describe hitting bottom. And they'll learn how to describe the crisis that's going on for them. So they're getting a little closer to not just all the things that happened to me, but here's what's going on with me now.
Yeah.
And then it says they move into cleaning up the wreckage of the past. And during that phase, they feel that this is a safe place to share, and they get even more vulnerable. And I think this is where they start to get into the character defects. And they start to get into, here was my part in the story, and, and the sharing tends to focus on, this is what happened with me, this is what I can control, this is what I can do, this is what I can't do, and less focused on others. And then they talk about putting life in order sharing, where we're pretty firmly out of denial, and we're starting to put our life back in order, where we're sharing more of our hope. I think those stages of sharing are really important, and the spirit of the fifth step happens whenever you go to a group. And whether, you know, in most 12-step groups, there's rules around crosstalk. I don't think that we have to hear from another person. Yeah, I've experienced that too, to get that feeling, just that, you know, knowing nods around the room when I've shared about me is healing. But I think the fifth step takes that even deeper, where you are getting direct feedback from another person.
Because oftentimes the person you're sharing with will share portions of their own fifth step and their fourth step. So again, that's more of a two-way than you might experience in a group. But often in a group, I mean, you talked about the head nods. There's also a feeling there that if you're in tune, you can pick up on that people are with you.
Yeah. Yeah. No matter where you're coming at in those shares. Since I'd opened the ACA Big Book, I'll read some things from there. I liked what the ACA Big Book has to say about what the fifth step does for us beyond just being known by another person. It says, by working step five, we are challenging the three main rules entrenched in our souls as a result of growing up in a dysfunctional home. The rules are don't talk, don't trust, and don't feel. Growing up in a dysfunctional family meant not trusting what you were seeing or what your parents said. Abuse was often minimized or blamed on another cause, which resulted in the child not trusting his or her own perceptions. In step five, we finally get to talk about what matters rather than denying or filtering what happened. And I like that phrase, what matters.
Yep.
Because I think in dysfunctional or abusive or alcoholic homes, we're told what matters. It matters that we look really good when we go to church. Or it matters that we make lots of money. We're told what matters, but what really matters is us and what happened to us and what our story is. This is a critical step for any adult child hoping to face the effects of dysfunctional upbringing and continue to grow in the ACA program.
Yeah, along with that, there's this paragraph. For some ACAs, the fifth step will be the first time they've told anyone some of their most troublesome memories of abuse. We know the courage this will take to move forward with step five. We know you will be letting someone into compartments of your mind that you may have thought would remain tightly shut forever. But these are the very secrets and problematic memories that need letting out. You are finally safe to take this action in ACA with a sponsor, trusted counselor, or spiritual leader.
I recently had a session with a client who, and he kind of has a pattern of doing this. He'll come into the room and I can feel there's something that he wants to talk about. And he'll usually, he'll take a deep breath and say, okay, I'm just going to say it. Here's what's going on. and at the end of a recent session, he said, I'm really glad that I don't compartmentalize here. And I said, I'm really glad that you're trying not to compartmentalize here, but don't get hung up on I do it or I don't.
Right.
Like, you're trying to bring those compartments down. And we spent a lot of that session talking about him trying to manage different people in different parts of his life. I made the comment to him, it feels like in your relationship, you want to be 5 years ahead of where you're actually at right now. And I think that compounds your suffering and compounds your problem when you can't just say, here's where it's at right now. And I think that's what happens in the fifth step is it's not I did some bad things, but let me tell you about my future because you'll be excited about that.
That's impressive.
Yeah. It's all about the pain and the hurt, which are what are real at that stage in recovery.
Well, and I like this. The ACA also gets into talking about grief. So it says this: each time we harmed another person or ourselves, we lost a piece of ourselves. Each time we shamed our own child or spouse, there was a loss. Each time we judged ourselves without mercy for common mistakes, there was a loss. Each day we remained in an abusive dependent relationship, there was a loss. Before finding ACA, we grew more weary each day, but we continued to try. We were the walking wounded with a smile. We were always on the verge of grief. Every adult child has unexpressed grief, which is usually represented by the symptoms of depression, lethargy, or forms of dissociation. The grief that we speak of in ACA is the cumulative loss of childhood. Grief is loss that is stuck beneath denial, willful forgetting, and the fear of being perceived as dramatizing the past. Grief is the built-up defeats, slights, and neglect from childhood. We carry this grief with us as we create careers, raise families, or trudge through life as best we can. Keeping ourselves busy or focusing on others seems to help us avoid looking at our childhood grief or loss, but it is there. We introduce grief work in step 5, realizing that such work is a lifetime journey. Longtime ACA members understand the importance of claiming grief or loss. Our experience shows that grief is often stored in our minds and bodies, waiting to be purged when the time is right. We understand that grief is cumulative, which means all the neglectful and shameful acts of our past are piled up. We had not forgotten them as we had thought. Our bodies remember. Our minds remember. Our inner child knows. In addition to addiction or depression, many of our members believe grief helps fuel our compulsive acts of cleaning, perfectionism, sex, binge eating, work, and gambling.
I love that claiming the grief.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling you before we started recording this dinner that I went to for an organization that helps women complete a 5K and a half marathon. And one of the speakers, she got up and she said, 5 years ago, I lost my 8-day-old baby and we had waited a long, long time to have this baby. She said, I lost all my will to live. And she said, it's really significant that I'm here because I'm a personal trainer. I went to school for that. I was working in a gym. I had lots of clientele. I was little and cute and strong. And she's like, when I lost my baby, I lost everything. And she's like, I gained a lot of weight and I would still go to work and I could feel people looking at me and I could feel them judging me. She said through this program, one of the things she determined, she said, I'm going to own my story. I'm going to own that I lost my baby. I'm going to own that I'm an overweight personal trainer. She talked about how doing that changed her outlook on the situation. She said it was real. There's no changing the fact that my baby's gone. It's real. There's no changing the fact that right now I don't look like a personal trainer, but she said I'm still a really good one. And I needed to own my grief instead of trying to avoid it.
Well, and there's this paragraph also that I love from ACA that says, as a result of working step 5, we seem to breathe easier and judge ourselves less harshly. For some, our posture changes. Our head is up. We make eye contact with people. We feel lighter in our step and in our breathing. We feel a greater connection to our higher power. That's kind of what you were talking about. Like, as she really started to own her story, her feelings about herself changed.
Which is so... I think it's so counterintuitive. You know, we feel like if I am this or if I get to this point, then I'll feel happy. I think it's really about embracing the crap that brings us peace.
And they also in ACA offer this suggestion. They say, be ready to immediately do step 6 and 7 when you've completed step 5. Step 6, we're entirely ready to have our defects removed. And step 7, we humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. They're meant to be worked together during this phase of step work. So,
I forget which book it was. It talked about how steps 4 and 5 really solidify steps 1 and 3, and it's like the practice of the theory that we put together in steps 1 through 3 about our higher power and how our higher power feels about us. In steps 4 and 5, we really test that. We really practice.
Right, because we can talk about steps 1 through 3 all we want about belief.
Yeah.
But until we start putting that into action and saying, okay, I'm going to put some stuff on the line here and open myself up, it's just a belief, right? It's not an experience.
And that's, I think that's one of the really cool promises of step 5 is that it does change.
Right.
It's not like you might want to try this. Like these aren't, when AA started, when they put together the big book, they said, here are suggestions. Here are things that we found effective.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm impressed with, what was it, 84 people that wrote that book?
Yeah.
Or 84 people that brought that together. How solid those suggestions have continued to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where do you want to go next?
Let's go to, what do you have on yours?
I have the 12 and 12, and I have Recovering Couples Anonymous.
Okay. Let me read. I've got Workaholics Anonymous on this one. So I'll just read a couple paragraphs from that. It says, for many of us in Workaholics Anonymous, this step can be a big stumbling block. Being perfectionists, we procrastinate. Many of us suffer from big egos. We use work as a way to distract ourselves from facing the reality of who we are and the pain of our past. To admit to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrong can seem impossible. But if we have completed our 4-step inventory and have begun to apply the first 3 steps to our lives, this step will bring a sense of inner peace and self-acceptance never known before. We begin to feel truly connected to God and our fellow human beings. We feel forgiven and experience a healing humility. We become more honest and realistic about ourselves. Then in one of the stories it says, this person is saying, I had to go back to step 2 many times during working step 5 to remember how I came to believe that there was a power greater than myself that loves me no matter what I have done. After sitting with each item on my 4-step, I felt more at peace than I had in a long time. I started to feel like my higher power wanted me to abstain from compulsive working every day, no matter what. I started to feel like I had the help to do that. I started feeling more secure in my recovery. I felt relieved. I felt grateful. I felt hopeful. This marked the beginning of starting to share my daily struggles with others every day. Instead of letting things build up, I could see the benefit of reducing my isolation. I asked my higher power for help to continue.
I think Recovering Couples Anonymous adds some additional insight as to why that happens, mm-hmm. that we can do that. And true to RCA form, there's very little said about the step other mm-hmm. than some suggestions for how to work it. But here's what they said. This is on page 27. It says, this process of doing the 5th step is a vehicle to self-acceptance. This may be difficult because of shame. However, this is your opportunity to have shame transformed into humility.
Mm.
I think that sharing the truth about us with another person is one of the only ways, I think, to overcome shame and to get to that point where mm-hmm. we can stop seeing ourselves as bad and wrong, and we can start seeing ourselves with compassion. And when we see ourselves with compassion, I think we see ourselves deserving of support and help
right.
and community and relationships.
Yes. Well, and NA, Narcotics Anonymous, says this. It says, step 5 is not simply a reading of step 4. It says, for years, we avoided seeing ourselves as we really were. We were ashamed of ourselves, and we felt isolated from the rest of the world. Now that we have the shameful part of our past trapped, we can sweep it out of our lives if we face it and admit it. It would be tragic to write it all down and then shove it in a drawer. These defects grow in the dark, and they die in the light of exposure. Some of us tried to hide part of our past in an attempt to find an easier way of dealing with our inner feelings. We may think that we have done enough by writing about our past. We cannot afford this mistake. This step will expose our motives and our actions. We cannot expect these things to reveal themselves. There is always a danger that we will exaggerate our wrongs. It is equally dangerous to minimize or rationalize our part in past situations. Addicts tend to live secret lives. For many years, we covered low self-esteem by hiding phony images that we hoped would fool people. Unfortunately, we fooled ourselves more than anyone. Although we often appeared attractive and confident on the outside, we were really hiding a shaky, insecure person on the inside. The masks have to go. We may never be able to remember all of our past mistakes. We do, however, give it our best and most complete effort. We begin to experience real personal feelings of a spiritual nature. Where once we had spiritual theories, we now begin to awaken to spiritual reality. So I like that too, that it's not just simply a reading and then let's be done with it.
Yeah.
Right? There really has to be this stirring within us that begins to take place.
Well, and it's a cultivating. I've seen this in the process of preparing couples for formal disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
How, as, particularly on the addict side, as they start preparing their disclosure, they'll say, like, I feel like the emotions aren't there anymore. I'm just giving facts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's an important part of the process because they need to get precise about what they're saying and accurate about the information. But then when they get in that session where they're disclosing to their spouse,
mm-hmm.
And they're giving that information, oftentimes we'll see the emotion come back.
Right.
And that recognition of starting to understand what that has meant and the impact that that's had.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot of going back and working again and again and talking a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when somebody's doing a disclosure letter, how many times do we have them revise it? It's not a set number, but it's...
Right. There's but it's dozens, a lot.
Dozens of times they're
and
going
then
back.
Once we have that completed letter, they're reading it multiple times, right? For them to get used to it, for their group to hear it, for their individual... I mean, as an individual therapist, you may hear it 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
Their group's going to hear it. You know, they're getting familiar with feeling it so that they don't break apart and can't contain themselves while they're reading it to their partner. But the emotion comes back in a way that is healing for them and enlightening for them.
Yeah. And I think that's a lot of what can happen in step 5 too.
Mm-hmm.
Step 4 is hard stuff.
Yes.
But I've witnessed that sharing step 5 with someone who is ready to hear your step 5 and can help you with that.
Mm-hmm.
And the emotions are healing rather than harmful.
Yeah. So hopefully by this point, our listeners are really excited to do steps 4 and 5.
Yes. And I bet they're ready for it too.
Right. There's something else in Depression Anonymous. That's a book we haven't read from yet. This says, note there is nothing stated or implied in the 5th step about beating ourselves up with guilt for our wrongs. This is never productive. We face our wrongs squarely and honestly for the present. This is sufficient. This step has another purpose. We begin to feel that we can be forgiven no matter what we have done.
Mm-hmm.
When we feel forgiven by God, we can more easily forgive others. Perhaps the largest bonus from step 5 is the release from our feelings of isolation. Depressives tend to be loners who feel that no one else understands the pain they are experiencing. The last phrase of the step, the exact nature of our wrongs, is important as well. A vague confession to arrow at the sun, as opposed to shooting at a bullseye. When you have a specific target, you can focus your energies. I have long believed that 50% of the solution to any problem lies in defining the problem. Once you've had the courage and commitment to lay it out to yourself exactly as it is, then you cannot and will not spend another day in a fantasy.
I hope our listeners know I'm over here nodding to all of this. I think that describes really well the kind of focus that step 5 can bring.
Mm-hmm.
And how important that focus is. I think until we admit the exact nature of our wrongs to another person, we don't really understand completely that exact nature.
Yep. And then Debtors Anonymous adds to this. It says, I believe at the core of my debting disease is the attitude that I am special. So special, I believe, I am exempt from the rules and that I deserve to have everything I want right now or on any given day. So special, I deserve to have nothing, not even space on the planet. To me, the essence of my debting behavior is to both undervalue and overvalue my place in the world. Right size was a foreign concept. Either way, my attitudes and behaviors were the manifestation of an ego that was immature, self-centered, unreasonable, irresponsible, and probably supremely annoying. Now I know money is money and love is love. Only a power greater than me could remove my shortcomings and transform me into something useful.
Mm.
And that reminds me of our series that we did on functional mature adults.
Yeah.
Right? Kind of getting into that right size.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of overvaluing and undervaluing.
Well, and that's really in step 4 that, and the ACA Big Book talks about this, that the exact nature of our wrongs is not just the list of all the horrible things that we've done. The exact nature is also our strengths and, things like that.
Our assets.
Yeah, so I like that right size approach. Mm-hmm. Instead of undervaluing or overvaluing the space that we need, we get it just right.
Yeah. In Eating Disorders Anonymous, they have a fifth step prayer that goes like this. Higher power, my inventory has shown me who I am. Yet I ask for your help in admitting my wrongs to another person and to you. Assure me and be with me in this step. For without this step, I cannot progress in my recovery. With your help, I can do this and I will do it.
I like that. I hadn't heard that before.
Yeah.
There's what, like 300 fellowships?
Yeah.
Something like that. 300 different 12-step fellowships. I didn't even know that there was an Eating Disorders Anonymous.
Yeah. Well, there's several in the eating category. So there's the overeating, there's the eating disorder. I think there's the compulsive eating.
Hmm.
Like there's several just within the eating topic.
Yeah. I think that prayer is a good place to end on. To me, it's a reminder that it's about the action and that we need help taking that action.
Yep.
It's not just something we can will ourselves to do.
And that with help, we can do it and we will do it.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of step five.
Yeah.
Thanks. This podcast is solely for the purpose of information and entertainment and does not constitute therapy, nor should it replace competent professional help.
At the end of another episode, we want to remind you that nobody has time for perfection. We are pursuing progress.
And remember the prayer of the perfectionist. Help me remember I can't do it all. Help me to take things one step at a time, and that the only step I need to focus on is the next right step for me.
Help me to remember that life is a journey. Help me to be able to separate all that I am learning from all that I have to do. Help me to remember that I am not alone, that I can ask for help. Help me to strive for frequent awakenings, not mastery. I am enough. Amen.